Friday, June 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, boxing great Muhammad Ali is memorialized in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky. We look back at the champion's contributions.
Boxing becomes the vehicle that allows him to do so many other things.
President Barack Obama approves a new U.S. military role in Afghanistan, and we'll get the latest on financial markets. It's all ahead. We begin in Louisville, Kentucky, where the city is bidding farewell to its most famous son, boxing legend Muhammad Ali. A mourning procession rode through Ali's hometown, past his childhood home, his high school, and at the center that bears his name. I'm joined by VOA's Ramon Taylor, who's in Louisville. Well, Ramon, the memorial service begins within the hour. What is known about what will take place? Hello, Ramon?
Everything is a little bit delayed right now, and that's because it took quite a while for the procession to go through some of these places that meant so much to him and to him and to his family. Again, this was a 23-mile or about 40-kilometer route, so you can imagine just thousands of people lined across the street in every direction, trying to get a couple glimpses, going from one street to the next, and I was among that crowd. At this point, we're expecting to see about 16,000 people ready to go in KFC Yum Center, a sports arena that will be waiting with the likes of Billy Crystal, former President Bill Clinton, who will both eulogize Muhammad Ali, and then a lot of his family members that were very close to him. Lonnie, his widow, and two of his daughters will speak at the ceremony, and they're just joined by the ranks of some of boxing's greats, including Lennox, and from Great Britain, and so many others. Of those 15,000 tickets, we're looking at about 5,000 who were close friends or family of Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been in Louisville for the past few days. What have people told you about Ali and then the city, and you know what the boxer meant to them?
Well, you know, you hear so much about the man, and until you come into this town, until you come to Muhammad Ali's hometown, you really get a sense of what he meant to this community, what he means for the old neighborhood where he grew up, which is a poor neighborhood. So in the West End, they are very proud of what he has contributed, not only to their generations that have seen him grow up through the ages, that remember playing ball with him, those that are still alive in their 70s now, but the grandchildren that they speak with, that they have a message for Muhammad, that Muhammad Ali represented greatness at a time when it was sometimes difficult to leave that neighborhood. So, you know, for someone that spent from their fifth birthday until their 20th, that many years in this home community before going off to do great things and still come back, he's really a hometown hero in their eyes. And he's never forgotten about them, just as they will never forget about him.
Well, Ramon, I mentioned to you that I happened to live in Louisville when I was a child, and I remember when he was known as Cassius Clay and how much the city was so proud of him. Well, the city saw a lot of changes in Ali over the years, but the boxer saw how the city changed.
That's right. I mean, the boxer changed, his community changed, but the love that they had for him never changed. And if anything, I mean, this city is really... has adorned him even more throughout the years. I mean, he was a controversial figure back in the day for some, beloved by most, but by joining the Nation of Islam, some had their doubts about him early on. All of those doubts are, put to rest now. He is a humanitarian. He's beloved by Muslims, by Christians in this town. I spoke with a Catholic priest who told me that his father didn't like him back in the day, and he's come around. I mean, so you can just imagine, if anyone didn't have these feelings towards him then, they certainly do now. And, you know, it's just a testament to who he is as a humanitarian, not just in the ring, but outside of it as well.
And he's going to be buried at Cave Hill Cemetery, a very prominent cemetery where there are the graves of Civil War soldiers, as well as Colonel Harlan Sanders, the founder of KFC. But I think we can safely say that Ali will now be the most famous person to be buried there.
I think that's pretty safe to say. He won't be the only sports icon. He won't be the only boxer, I believe, but he will be, from anyone you talk to in this town. There are so many graves there of beloved people to this city and to this state. One of the reasons why he chose that site, but you can bet that this is going to be a bigger attraction for all that he represented.
All right. Thanks so much, Ramon. That's Ramon Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky with a look at what's trending. Well, Andrew, I guess there's a lot going on today.
Yes, absolutely. And, Muhammad Ali and his funeral is the top trending topic with hashtag Ali funeral. And a lot of what Ramon was just talking about, we're seeing on social media. He talked about kind of bridging the generational divide where it's beloved by people of all ages. And we're seeing one of the most poignant images on social media, parents holding these kids who can't be older than 3 or 4 years old, taking them out just so they can touch the hearse as it passes by, just so they can be part of this moment and be connected to Muhammad Ali in some way. The hearse, of course, covered in flowers. We're seeing images of that across the internet. And we're seeing video of people along this 23-mile route. And as the hearse goes by and they're filming it, you hear Ali, Ali.
Yeah.
And just the admiration for this man from the people of this city is just overwhelming. And you can really get a sense of that from the social media, even though you may not be there.
Yeah, yeah. What else is trending?
Well, we also have this Twitter fight, I guess you can say, or Twitter back and forth between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So, of course, Barack Obama endorses Hillary Clinton for president. Donald Trump tweets out and says, Obama just endorsed crooked Hillary. He wants 4 more years of Obama, but nobody else does. And she responds with 3 words that people say are the response, delete your account, which is kind of this internet meme where if people are saying things that are out of line or whatnot, you just say, delete your account. It's funny that most of Hillary Clinton's tweets on her Twitter page have gotten, maybe on average about 1,000, 1,500 retweets. Well, as of we're talking right now, this one has over 415,000 retweets, over 500,000 likes. So people saying she kind of dropped the mic and, walked away and said, boom, that's my response. Donald Trump did tweet back at her and said, oh, which one of your 823 staffers did it take to work that up? And brought up her emails, that email controversy and emails that she had deleted. But people said, yeah, you can't really respond to such a big burn as she had. So this is kind of the opening salvo, I guess, of the social media fight on for the election 2016. People wondering, maybe we should just skip the debates and have the debate on Twitter.
Maybe. All right. Thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. U.S. President Barack Obama formally endorses Democratic presidential nominee Hillary Clinton. Senior U.S. officials hold candid discussions with their counterparts in Pakistan Friday on issues. A Hindu monastery worker in Bangladesh is hacked to death Friday. And Australian and Malaysian investigators are eager to examine possible debris from Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 that went missing 2 years ago. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com. And on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
Pharmaceutical medications, they are meant to make life better. But ironically, these compounds, when improperly disposed, can be dangerous for other life forms. The drugs are finding their way into lakes, streams, and other waterways, posing serious health concerns for aquatic life. Researchers have pointed to treated wastewater as the culprit, the main source of water that contains medicinal compounds and is released into the environment. But a new study published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology Letters finds a number of chemical compounds, such as the diabetes drug metformin, have also been found in lakes and streams that don't take on wastewater from treatment plants. Scientists from the United States Geological Survey suggest that runoff from urban areas and subsurface water movement may also be behind the flow of drugs into these waterways. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, all the latest financial news. U.S. President Barack Obama has approved a wider role for the U.S. military in Afghanistan to help local forces combat the Taliban. I spoke with VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas and asked her if this revised plan was expected.
In some ways it is, because the White House has always said that it would continue to review the best way to accomplish the mission in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria. And so they have always left open that there could be changes to how they're doing things based on what works and what doesn't work. So based on the advice of military officials, the White House says President Obama has authorized an expanded role, given more authority to military on the ground to conduct more airstrikes, for example, against the Taliban, and also to more closely accompany and advise Afghan forces that are battling the Taliban and also, you know, other elements there like extremists.
But this does not involve ground troops.
No. I mean, the White House position is the troops that they have there are there to train, advise, and assist. President Obama announced an end to the combat mission in Afghanistan in 2014. And so they, you know, brought down the number of troops to 9,800. And that is the current level now. And the Obama administration initially said, well, we're going to have them all out by the time I leave office. But then after, you know, receiving more advice, they decided to bring the level down to 5,500 in order to protect troops that are already there, continue some of the mission, and protect some bases in key areas. Because the view is that extremism is still a problem. Taliban is still a problem. And the Afghan forces really are not quite yet ready to secure the country without this support at this point.
That's VOA White House correspondent Mary Alice Salinas. And now for the latest on financial market news, I'm joined by Jill Malandrino in VOA's New York City studio. So, Jill, why is the Dow facing triple-digit losses today before the Federal Open Market Committee meeting next week, and as well as the Brexit vote on June 23rd?
Well, it's been a really interesting week, to say the least. The three major U.S. stock indices are trading lower, but let's think about where we were in the beginning of the week. The S&P 500 was over 2,100, which is just about 1% away from an all-time high. The Nasdaq got over 5,000 for the first time in 2016, and the Dow was over 18,000. So what's happened over the past couple of days to reverse course? A big part of it is a sharp drop in oil prices because the dollar has moved higher, and traders also took some profits following a winning streak that pushed crude to 2016 highs. So I certainly understand what's going there. But I think the two biggest things we have to look at for June are the interest rate hike decision on June 15th and the Brexit vote on June 23rd. Global bond yields, that's really what's created the issue this morning, crumbled to 0% and negative in some cases. This makes financial stocks move lower because they need higher yields and higher interest rates for their profits and their margins to grow. So that's also contributing to the lower stock market as financial stocks are getting hit. The reason why global markets are jittery over Brexit, it's because it could potentially lead the UK into a recession. Regardless of the result on June 23rd, volatility just doesn't disappear overnight. Those calling for the UK to remain say EU membership gives the country access to the world's largest trading bloc and greater overall heft on the global stage. The other side of the Brexit say that the UK can serve out its own trade deals and its economy would thrive outside of EU and all of the red tape. So it really is pretty divided. But what I'm concerned about is there's a very big populist trend emerging, as we've seen in our U.S. elections, and it's a big platform for the exit campaign as well. So I'm not sure the economic implications for Brexit may be fully understood by voters. So I think volatility is going to be here for a while until we see what the reaction is going to be from a yes or no vote.
Yeah, and I know that the polls in the UK, they're fairly tight, I think, at the moment. And so, you know, we got two more weeks to go, too.
Right. They were fairly tight. And a lot of this came out over the weekend where it almost showed an exit edging a bit. And that was why we saw such volatility with trading in the pound. And again, that's why I think we're going to see volatility persist even after the vote, because even if they don't exit the EU, you have a lot of hedging trades with the pound that have to be unwound. That takes time and it takes a lot of liquidity. If they were to vote to exit, then we have to see how the economic stage will be set for the UK and also for the rest of the Eurozone. So there is a lot of uncertainty out here, and it's going to be very interesting because after we get into July, then we kick into third quarter earnings season. So we're going to have company-specific news, global macro news, and it could be an interesting summer when typically trading is slower.
Thanks very much, Jill. That's Jill Malandrino in New York City. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA. Every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Well, as we've been reporting, Muhammad Ali is being remembered today at a public interfaith memorial service in Louisville, Kentucky. International Edition's Lori London talked about Ali and how he'll be remembered with Michael Ezra, professor of American Multicultural Studies at Sonoma State University and the author of Muhammad Ali, The Making of an Icon.
Boxing becomes the vehicle that allows him to do so many other things. But he's an entertainer. He's a draft resister. He's a black nationalist. He's a Muslim. He's a humanitarian. He is so many things.
It's a real loss for a lot of folks out there, like you said, in so many different corners of the world, whether it be the Muslim faith, people that he felt like he was an advocate for Muslim Americans and abroad, Parkinson's, people suffering from Parkinson's disease, African Americans, so many different layers to his life.
Yeah, I want to speak to two things there. The first thing is a lot of people are sad about Ali's death, and we did lose someone great. But I actually think people should be happy for Muhammad Ali. Nobody was more prepared for this moment than Muhammad Ali. And for the past 30 years, every single thing he's done has been to get into heaven. And I think he was sick, and I think this sounds ridiculous, but I think he was probably happy about it in some ways. He's been talking for a long time about this, that he's ready. And as far as who he speaks for, I do think in particular Muslim Americans have lost a great spokesperson. Ali is revered all across the board. Even would-be Islamophobes loved Muhammad Ali. And he was able to speak and have credibility like nobody else. When you've heard about Donald Trump's relocation plan for Muslims, when you've heard about 9/11, and now Ali is gone, and there is nobody I can think of who even comes close to stepping into that void as a prominent Muslim American who is beloved by non-Muslims.
The people planning to attend Muhammad Ali's funeral really speak to the impact that he has made worldwide. You've got the president of Turkey. You've got King Abdullah of Jordan. You've got former President Bill Clinton. All of these people and many, many more.
Ali seems to bridge such a wide range of political ideologies and racial and ethnic and national identities. It's something that so many people can agree upon that they admire Muhammad Ali. You have someone like Bill Clinton giving him a standing ovation at the 1996 Olympics, crying openly as he watches Muhammad Ali light the Olympic torch. Then you have George W. Bush 10 years later giving him the Congressional Medal of Honor, the highest civilian honor you can get in the United States. He bridges Clinton and Bush. People around the world see him almost as an unofficial American diplomat humanitarian figure in ways that no other unelected official I can think of served since Malcolm X.
How do you think that came to be?
I think Ali gets ultimate respect because what he turned out to think and do and stand for has been accepted as right, and he took incredible risks in order to take those stands. You have somebody who, in the prime of his career, in his age 26, 27, 28 years, the prime years for a boxer, and you don't get a second chance at those, someone who is making millions of dollars per fight, which would translate into, by today's standards, hundreds of millions of dollars. It is not an over-exaggeration to say that he gave up $500 million in purses in those 3.5 years he was out. And people think that Muhammad Ali didn't allow himself to be drafted into the Vietnam War because he was afraid to be killed in combat. That shows that someone doesn't know the whole story. Ali was offered many times by the government the chance to do what most entertainers do, which is be drafted and then entertain the troops, do boxing tours, tell some jokes, boost morale, never fight on the front lines. They didn't ask Elvis Presley to fight on the front lines. Ali would be much more useful to the military through entertainment. Even with that soft gig, he rejects it. And after that, he goes bankrupt, loses all his money, in debt because of legal fee, all of his prime years gone, his boxing career on the line, all for what? To stand up for what he thought was right. Nobody I can think of in U.S. history took that kind of risk.
That's author Michael Ezra, and he was speaking to International Edition's Lori London about the late boxing great Muhammad Ali. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Bangladesh, attacks by violent extremists targeting intellectuals, secular writers, members of religious minority groups, and activists continue at an alarming growth rate. Most recently, on June 6th, a Hindu priest was killed in western Bangladesh as he rode his bicycle to a prayer service. On June 5th, a local Christian was knifed to death after Sunday prayers in northwest Bangladesh in an attack claimed by the Islamic State. Police said unidentified attackers murdered the 65-year-old in the village of Bonpara, home to one of the oldest Christian communities in Muslim-majority Bangladesh. Sunil Gomez was hacked to death at his grocery store just near a church in Bonpara village, said Shafiqul Islam, deputy police chief of Nator district. The killing came hours after the wife of a senior anti-terrorism police officer was murdered in the southeastern city of Chittagong. Police suspect members of a banned local militant group are responsible. Three unidentified men stabbed and then shot Mahmuda Khanam Mitu in the head as she walked her son to a school bus stop near her home, according to Chittagong authorities. Miss Mitu was the wife of Babul Akhtar, who led several operations against the banned Jamaatul Mujahideen Bangladesh militant group in Chittagong in recent months. Such attacks have left more than 40 people dead in 3 years. Among those attacked are university professors, secular bloggers, human rights activists, foreigners, and members of religious minorities, including Shia, Sufi, and Ahmadi Muslims, Christians, Buddhists, and Hindus. Bangladesh has a history as a moderate, tolerant, inclusive society that values the diversity of its people, culture, and religions, and such attacks fundamentally seek to undermine all that Bangladesh stands for and all that the Bangladeshi people have strived to bring about in recent years. The United States condemns the brutal murders of innocent people in Bangladesh. No one should have to pay with their life because of something they say or believe. The United States will continue to support all those who work on behalf of tolerance and human rights in Bangladesh and around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.